Great. Okay, I guess we'll get started. First, I'd like to welcome you to Gator Radio, and thank you so much for agreeing to share your wisdom and knowledge with us Castellans. Do you guys have any questions about the Gator the program?
No, go
Or
ahead. Go ahead, Pedro.
Oh, please speak first.
No, you.
Okay. Now, about the program, I understood that it will be sent next week to school.
We're not sure. Next week, we're planning on doing, because it's Earth Day next week, so we're planning on doing like an Earth Day radio program. But the week after that, maybe we can air this program. I'll send you guys the exact date and time so you can tell everyone.
Okay,
Brilliant.
fine.
Yeah.
Do you want to start putting some questions?
Yeah, definitely. Sorry. Okay, so first I'd like to ask you, Pedro, how you first got involved with the effort to free Western Sahara. I mean, how did that really start for you?
Well, when I start my my master's studies here in at University of Leiden in the case law that we studied around the problem of self-determination, the advisory opinion of the International Court of Justice on Western Sahara was obligatory reading. And that was my first contact with the question of Western Sahara, I would say.
Oh, interesting.
But
Now,
I
how
was,
about you, Cynthia? How did you get started?
well, in fact, my thesis was on the question of East Timor, and but I quickly understood that the two questions were very, very similar. Of course, I was working for the liberation of East Timor, not only during my study, but also with the solidarity groups here in Holland and also in Portugal. And later, when East Timor was free already from the Indonesian occupation, the people who was with me at the International Platform of Juries for East Timor asked if we could go further with the question of Western Sahara because they were so similar, and that's why.
And how about you, Cynthia? How did you get involved?
Well, actually, it was Carlos Wilson that sent me an invite. I had gained a bit of notoriety with a song that I had, and the original artist had kind of used her voice to raise awareness, which was Eartha Kitt, for Vietnam. And I thought, well, if you're going to have that kind of visibility, you want to do something with it. So I had been thinking about it for quite some time, about 2.5 years, and then came an email inviting me to come in May of 2001, shortly before 9/11. And I brought my son and a fellow friend that was a photographer to document the Sahrawi camps and the plight that they were in and try to raise their visibility. So that's how it started for me.
Wow. Pedro, I was wondering if you could give us a very sort of short background information about the history of Western Sahara and what really is going on there right now.
Oh my goodness, that will take a lot of time.
I
Now, I'll try to be as short as
know.
possible. Look, the question of Western Sahara, and you can say practically the same of the question of East Timor, is like this. You have two dictatorships in Portugal and in Spain, who have these two colonies, East Timor and Western Sahara. At the moment, that in Portugal, with the so-called Carnation Revolution, the democracy was established, and also in Spain, at the moment of the death of Franco,
Yes.
a smooth transition to democracy happened. The both countries were prepared to give freedom to both colonies. But exactly at the same time, and that it's curious that the invasions occurred with 3 or 4 weeks of difference. Morocco and Indonesia invaded both territories. Well, of course, both invasions were a crime against peace. Both invasions were a violation of the right to self-determination of both peoples. There was also a case of a disobedience to the UN Security Council, because in both cases, Security Council urged the two states to withdraw from the territories. The situation now, after all these years, of course, East Timor is already independent, an independent state. But in the case of Western Sahara, unfortunately, the occupation goes on, and it goes also with a lot of human rights violations, which are documented by Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and even by the American department who supervise these human violations in around the world.
Wow. Sorry, let's back up a little bit. Pedro, would you like to introduce yourself to the Castilla community?
Well, I'm my name is Pedro Pinto Leite. And I'm Portuguese originally, who also obtained the Dutch nationality because I live in Holland already for more than 25 years. And I studied law in Portugal. I lived in Africa as well, in Angola. My father was born and died in Angola. I studied in Lisbon and in Coimbra. I finished my studies in Lisbon. I became an attorney in Lisbon, and then I went to Holland to study international law.
Wow. Cynthia, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm a actress and a rec jazz recording artist, and was nominated for a shared Nobel Peace Prize in 2005. So I guess all roads lead us to the Western Sahara.
Well, thank you again for being on the program.
Of course.
And thank you, Pedro, for explaining, for sort of giving us an introduction to Western Sahara.
Great explanation.
I was wondering, I have a question about the berm or the Moroccan wall. Could either of you sort of explain what the purpose of this wall is, why it's there, and who is it keeping from reaching
Yeah,
places?
interesting. I actually, when I was there, didn't have an opportunity to visit it. The berm, I did take photos of a model of it and saw the explosives and the protection that's around it. And apparently, it can be seen from space and is larger than the Great Wall of China, if you can
Wow.
imagine that. To have to see that and be diverted, di divided from family members, you're neither allowed to leave Morocco nor could you possibly enter. Back. You want to go on that, Pedro.
It separates sort of the free zone, right, to the south from the Moroccan controlled territory. Am I right?
Well, the idea of this wall, and I must first say that the wall was built with the help, unfortunately, of the United States, but also of France and Israel. It's not exactly a wall as you see in Palestine or even the wall of China. It is made of sand, but with in some places also with other material, not only sand, but particularly it's a protection is protected, let us say, with a field of mines. There are more than 5 million mines in this wall. The wall is incredibly big. It's about 2,500 kilometers long. It starts even in the territory of Morocco and goes until the territory of Mauritania. This it includes, let us say, it's about leaves one third of the territory of Western Sahara out of it, but protects for the Moroccan occupiers the most important region, the region with phosphates, and also the coast, which has, of course, which is very rich on fish.
For those listeners who don't know, Western Sahara is bordered by Morocco in the north, and then Algeria in the northeast, and Mauritania to the south. And Mor right, am I correct?
Yeah, and I was going to say that because of this berm, it has completely shaped the dynamics, or it's one of the contributors of what shaped the dynamics within the camps, because the men are on up against the berm, and other things, and the women are left in the camps to basically, contend with all the other issues. Wouldn't you say, Pedro?
Yes, well, I would like to add as well that the Moroccans have been so incredibly not only cruel with the fact that they have all these mines who made already a lot of people being not only killed, but of course wounded, and I know a lot of people who lost their legs, for instance, and incredibly, but some days ago, during a demonstration against the wall with the participation of many people from other countries, a young Sahrawi who got very emotional and went further to in direction of the wall. Well, one of those mines exploded and he lost his leg.
It's horrific.
It's terrible. And again, it's the hypocrisy of the Moroccan regime is so incredible that they were even accusing the Sahrawis of violating the peace truce because of that. Instead of apologizing for what happened, they accused
Well, that's indicative of how the pattern that's been occurring for this long. Is that
Yes,
it?
indeed, yeah.
The wall was. Go ahead.
No, please continue.
I was just going to say the wall was built in basically several stages, and it started in about August of 1980 and continued on into mid early 1987. And the propaganda is that they're trying to protect and keep the Sahrawi out and all these things. It's very difficult when you have something with so much propaganda going on. It's only now with the dissemination of facts so quickly occurring, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or, Blackberries, it's like the information is getting out there quicker and quicker and quicker. quicker and people are beginning to understand that you can't have an issue of human rights in Palestine or in East Timor or wherever and not consider the plight of the Sahrawian people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does the U.S. See the how has it been involved recently, and does it see the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic as an independent nation?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Oh, I'm just wondering, how has the U.S. been involved in this process? Does it consider Western Sahara or the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic an independent nation?
No. The question of recognition of the Sahrawi Republic has been a very curious fact. The regional organization, the African Union, not only recognizes the Sahrawi Republic, as it included it as the vice presidency of the organization. It is recognized by practically the majority of the countries of Africa. Because of that, Morocco withdrew from the organization. It's the only African country which is not in the African Union.
That's right.
But unfortunately, the United Nations, and that happened also not only because of the United States, but also of several countries in Europe, like France, which is who backs Morocco on this occupation, I must say. The United Nations doesn't consider the Sahrawi Republic as a state, and this
it limits the passport, it limits travel, it limits seeing, getting health, medical care,
and in fact what we have to do, and particularly now that we have a much more progressive situation in the United States with Obama's president. What we have to get from his administration is that the Sahrawi Republic is recognized by the United States. If that happens, it's curious because Morocco was the first country that recognized the United States as a state. Now, it would be very, very interesting if the United States can recognize the Sahrawi Republic. And with that, many countries in Europe would follow, I would say.
Indeed. Senator Ted Kennedy is the largest supporter of the Sahrawian people and their cause.
Yes, and he was also a very good supporter of East Timor. Same with Senator Feingold, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
As I understood, they've written a letter to President Obama, haven't they?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There was a letter subscribed by five other senators, among them Feingold. And I know that there is in the House of Representatives another letter circulating, in the same, more or less, in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's it's exciting. It's an exciting time right now. Are you optimistic for the future, or?
Yes, of course I am. I'm sure it is. Are you, Cynthia?
It always takes a while for things to kind of catch up, but eventually, as you can see by our past election, that all things are possible, and we do arrive at a fair moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Look, I think I'm particularly well placed to say that I'm optimist, because first as a Portuguese, I lived under dictatorship in Portugal for many years. Under dictatorship, of course, and in a colonial situation. I lived in Angola as a colony. Then what I saw, and of course I fought against the fascists in Portugal and against colonialism, what I saw was that with democratization in Portugal, We were able to see Angola, Mozambique, São Tomé e Príncipe, Cape Verde, Guiné-Bissau, Mozambique becoming, free, independent. The same in the end happened with East Timor, as you know. But not only that, I was, for instance, an observer at the referendum in Eritrea, another case that took more than 30 years to get free from Ethiopia. I followed the case of Namibia, another situation that people thought it would be very difficult to solve. I saw the South Africa who abolished apartheid. There's all these cases, and not to speak, of course, about the Baltic states, for instance, who became who regained independence. Well, all these cases prove that a people who doesn't want to be submitted will win in the end. It's a matter of time.
Exactly. Very precise.
What has made Western Sahara, what makes it different in that it hasn't yet gained its independence? What, how is this harder than it seems other places?
Well, I don't know if you can say that it's harder than other places because, for instance, the independence of Algeria was incredibly difficult. And you know, the French colonialists committed horrible crimes in Algeria. It was perhaps the most bloody independence of all cases of self-determination. But I would say that now what the how do you say it in English, stumbling block is indeed France. France is backing Morocco, and because of that, many countries at the European Union are not don't want to affront France. Spain has a very bad position as well because, in fact, it sold the Western Sahara in exchange for 35% of the phosphate profits and some fishing rights in the waters of Western Sahara. I think this is the
I mean,
case.
the largest supporters are more in the north, like Norway and Finland, Sweden.
Sweden as well. Sweden in the European Union is the country who has a better place. For instance, the best position. It was the only country who voted against the fisheries agreement with Morocco, which includes the waters of Western Sahara, even if the European Union tried to dissimulate that fact. I must say, and that I'm very glad to say, that the Foreign Minister of Ireland has very recently pronounced a very important statement on the need to liberate Western Sahara from the Moroccan oppression.
Oh, that's great. Why is France supporting Morocco?
It's a former colony.
there economic reasons or
Yes, there are economic reasons, but there
there's
are other. I would say that it's a continuation of the colonial mentality. Unfortunately, France, you can see that the way as France is dealing with the former colonies in West Africa. France has a very strange position concerning these countries. It's curious because you don't see that so much with England. You certainly don't see that with Portugal. All the other former colonial powers have a much better position in this way as France has with the former colonies.
Hmm. Thank you so much. Cynthia, could you talk a little bit about your experience with visiting the refugee camps in Western Sahara?
I thought the most incredible thing was that this amazing openness, amazing sharing, a way, an insight at looking at problems, that their philosophy, a liberal Muslim philosophy, a struggling and self-determination. I never have I been around anyone more proud, more. It's a very. It was a very unique experience, and when you enter there, you become part of a family that never. That. Never leave you, and you never leave them. I don't know, there's lots of places you can visit, but when you see the struggle and you see why they're making this struggle, it's I think it's a lesson that so many of us can learn from. There's a lot that can be taken from the way they view, not getting what you want. And how they've worked around it and what they've tried to achieve with such limited resources and outside help. And when we think about global warming and whatnot, hasn't been too much of a topic in the last few months, but the reality is that anything that we're facing here, it's brought to such extremes for them. The temperature of the desert in the summer and the floods in the winter and the rains, I mean, it's how they're surviving this is against all odds.
Are there any plans for them to, be moving out of these refugee camps soon, or are they pretty much there?
Not unless the referendum is reached. I mean, they're just sitting there. They've agreed to in 1991. They agreed to a UN peace accord, and they're sitting there ever since, waiting for a referendum that is fair to all. And they're living in self-determination until that fact becomes a reality.
I think that they don't want to go out of the camps in an occupied territory. But they prefer to live in those difficult situations
What a
than to.
statement that makes, that you would live out in the extremes of the Saharawi and the Sahara Desert versus living under occupation. Back, yeah.
That's what I. And another thing, and that's also very interesting. One of the lies that Morocco is trying to sell to the public opinion is that the people in the camps of Tindouf are as hostages of Polisario, that they are kept in camps against their will. It's very curious that I think it was Human Rights Watch or Amnesty International, one of these organizations has very recently made I think Human Rights Watch has made a very detailed report on the human rights situation in both the occupied territory and the camps of Tindouf, and they came to the conclusion that everybody can leave the camps also because they have access to Mauritania very easily. So they can leave the camp. If they wanted to go to Western Sahara, the occupied territory, they could do it through Mauritania without any problem. Does that mean that people are really there, well, because they don't want to go to a occupied territory? And when they vote, of course they will go. No doubt.
I have a question. How can we as students and youth contribute to to your cause?
Well, I think what's amazing is even the fact that we're having this conversation, the visibility has completely grown exponentially for the Sahrawi refugees versus even 5 years ago. So the fact that you're having this conversation and are curious about what you can do, you know, there's so many things basic from sunglasses to blankets to trying to be a collective of other people on the internet with other, you know, even using the Facebook as well as I've seen it used lately. I mean, it's slowly becoming, you know, you can write your senator of represent, you can, there's a lot of things that can be done, but the best is studying up on it and becoming empowered by it and playing it forward. Their story.
Is there anyone doing stuff on Twitter or is it solely Facebook right now?
You guys are the only one I saw on Twitter. I saw your radio station.
Oh, cool. Well, we can start a
I would like to add something to what Cynthia said about the importance of the young people to listening to what happens in the camps or what happens in the occupied territory of Western Sahara. Years ago, I was in the Institute of Social Studies in The Hague. That was in the beginning of the 90s, I think. And somebody put me the same question. And it's curious that my answer was, of course, it's important because many of you will do something for East Timor. You know what happened? Many of the students who became members of the platform of Juries for East Timor were later at several ministries. I remember one was in Macedonia, other was in Vietnam, other was in Thailand, and they were acting exactly for a better position of their respective countries on the question of East Timor. This, I hope that many people at your school can, in the next years, have an important contribution in their own in their own jobs, in their own positions in the society.
I think also a thing that would really, really help, and it's much more on a personal level, is some sense of not really a pen pal or some kind of communication with the camps. You know, the chil it's very difficult. The children, a few children get to leave the country and during the summer come and stay with families in America. And if more families could do that and host the children, you know, it helps a lot in their spirit, and it also helps in the problem solving of what they're about to face. You know, when they're only raised in the camps and take a bus 1,000 miles to go to school and are separated from their families, it's very difficult on your to keep your force. And I think that if they can see fellow, you know, kids their age writing and saying, listen, this is what's going on. It's so affirming to know that somebody out there cares. That's like the hugest thing. They feel very isolated. There's products they can make that can be shot and sold on the internet. Some, you know, a student could set up a commerce. There's all kinds of, you know, mini microeconomic plans that people can come up with. Gone are kind of the days of just a handout. That you know, you can't value someone on what their net worth is. It's really comes down to the relationship between people and letting them know that like that they're not alone and it is a little bit more than just sending an email and joining a group on Facebook, but actually to find a family or you know, I can certainly give the contacts where they could bring more kids to the Bay Area and be hosted in, say, some of the students' homes. There's, you know, there's a lot of things to do, and the key is to kind of always realize that part of your life is always looking at how you can give back, and who you can share to. And they need it because they've been underrepresented for a very long time.
I do agree. And it's curious that you mentioned Facebook, because in the first years of the struggle for East Timor, we were still using telephone and just the normal post. I remember that it took us a lot of effort to have to go, for instance, to have fax. It was much easier than the telephone, much cheaper as well. And then you had the email, and that's one of the things that make the oppressors very worried, is that the telecommunications, the fact that people receives now television through satellite, the fact that people can send emails and you know about human rights violations immediately at the moment that those violations occur. Now, that makes the trouble for the oppressors to they can't deny it anymore. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows. And that's why
the biggest...
also, yes?
No, I was just gonna say, in adding to that point, is the amount of videos on YouTube.
Yes,
when I went in 2001, there wasn't really anything out there that visually documented and set you there. Like, you really went, I get it. I see what's going on. I see what the issue is. I see the brutality. I see the difficulty. You can see it. There's no hiding it. And that's the key, is like, once that truth, once that starts, it's exploding with this ability through what you were saying, Pedro, this advancement in electronic communication.
Is there a decent communication infrastructure there so that they can access the internet or cell phones?
That's what I wish. If there was the biggest wish, it would be to have that. So that even the doctors that are like the head of the hospital there isn't relying on international aid and something through more political avenues, that instead he could be personally soliciting donations or what Pfizer or a company like Oakley for sunglasses. That's the one thing, is they have the time and they don't have the way to get what they need out there. That's if there was one thing that could help more than anything, was that they had, because I know in many places in Africa they're able to have once a week or once a month a satellite truck come and you're able to communicate. That's probably the biggest slowdown, as we said, stumbling block, is that there is no ability to communicate via the internet. You can use a BlackBerry.
Well, I know this conversation has inspired all of us to really forge connections and make an impact. Some way, however we can. I was wondering if you guys had any last comments, because unfortunately our time is running out.
I mean, if I was going to address the student body, and sometimes we think there's so many issues out there. What do we do? What do we happen? I mean, I can't even imagine what kids now are thinking about. I didn't have global warming. I mean, there were other issues. But it's so extreme when you have so much coming at you that when you start to realize this is just the new employment structure, this is just the new philosophy that is engulfed, is enfolded in our lives. So it's no longer like, oh, well, if I concentrate on their needs, I'm not going to succeed on stock, on the stock market. Oh, if I become, if I want to be a successful doctor, then me worrying about doing volunteer work or going to the camps or fundraising is going to divert me from that. It's not the case at all. It completely enriches, and you have to, it's only, what is it, Pedro? It's 270,000 people. I mean, if anything, I would be inspired by the fact that you're not being obligated to be able to help 6 million people and to help raise awareness for this small and important jewel in the world. I find it exciting rather than, oh gosh, I can't really do anything. And there's so much. that can be done. And
Yeah.
there's such an important voice. That's the biggest thing I don't think I can stress enough, that somehow, given their plight, it's given them a perspective that I think we are amiss if we're not highlighting their causes and what they have to say. It's just, it takes all facets to make the world a diamond, and without them having their voice, we're all missing a little bit of our own selves.
I do agree 100%. And look, I would say that the fact that we are in talking to young people, well, I was young once, and I know that one of
You're
the,
still young, Pedro.
well, thank you. But one of the things that characterize young people is first the need for to search the truth,
Just
the need to change what is wrong. And that's exactly something that now with the new methods, the new means that we have, including internet, that's something that you at your school, and of course everywhere where students are, you can help in this way, is to find the truth, is to I used to say that the lies of Morocco start with the way as they interpret the Visitor Opinion 75. Now, you can say, okay, it's a very legal stuff, it's for people who study international law already. No, that's not the case. I gave the end of the decision of the court, the last paragraphs. I've read to people from 14, 15 years old, and all of them could immediately see that the International Court of Justice said that the people of Western Sahara are entitled to exercise their right to self-determination. Thus, the court was giving 100% the reason to the people of Western Sahara and not to Morocco. Now, look what the Moroccans say. It's exactly the other way around. It's the biggest lie, and everything that they built upon this lie. Now, just look for the truth. And help the Sahrawis, I would say.
Yeah, that's really interesting, is that we do have the ability now where we maybe 40 years have gone up 40 years ago would have gone, oh well, what can I do? But now it's almost the righting a wrong is almost the norm. It happens so quickly. Oh, you need this signed, oh, this has to happen. Great. It's occurring as if it's the most normal thing, rather than, oh, that's extra work. And when like that you see the truth in one thing, it makes you aware in seeing the truth in anything. And it's
I want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for coming and speaking to us. You are amazing. Thank you so much. I'd also like to, would you guys like to come speak with us again sometime in the future to help shape our school efforts in helping with Western Sahara?
Love it. It's so exciting. I mean, this is all so exciting. It's very, yes, of course. Any.
Well, thank you. Thank you,
Thank you,
Pedro.
Meg.
Thanks, Cynthia.
No, thanks. That was great.
thanks.
Bye, Pedro. Adios.
Yeah, Cynthia and Pedro, I just want to extend my thanks as well. That was a wonderful conversation, and I was just twittering in the background. I usually do not participate in these because, it's the students' radio show, and I want it to be the student radio show. And I was just kind of processing on the fly just how all the things that I learned in this 45-minute conversation with you, and it's fascinating on so many levels, and I'm just amazed that, you know, I'm almost 40 years old and I've never heard this story before, and I'm interested in learning more, and I hope we can continue a conversation with you in the future.
Of course, I'll be glad.
It's incredibly interesting. Thank you.
Pietro, Cynthia, sorry, my mom wants to speak with you. She was like, don't let them go without me talking to them. So, thank you, Mr. Montaigne, so much. I don't know how this...
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mr. Montaigne.
Well, we'll just keep the call going so your mom can come on and say hello.
Thank you.